Hello, everyone. It's great to be here. I'd like to start off with a demonstration. I'd like to have everyone please stand up. And on the count of three, I want everyone to go like this. Okay? Wait. One, two, three. Oh, cool. Standing ovation. 1 minute into the talk. All right. It can't get any better. All right. My name is Bruce Barnett. I'm a computer scientist. Some of the work I do isn't quite as exciting to people around here. Things like data provenance and security ontologies and stuff like that. But I'm also a magician. I've been a magician for 40 years. And, I have, maybe some of you have read my tutorial on SED. I don't know. Anyone? Number one on Google, but, anyhow. So I kept thinking about the similarities between what magicians do and what hackers do. And there's actually a lot in common. You know, first of all, you ever notice magicians are always wearing black, which seems to be, you know, dominant color here. They like to shock people. And we've got a few interesting people around here who are in that category. But mostly, they have secret knowledge. And secret knowledge is the key to both hacking and to be a magician. Because with secret knowledge, and you go against something who has very rigid assumptions, it just blows right through it, and you get profit. Got to put the formula in there somewhere. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about the magician's toolkit, you know, the different things they use to accomplish the illusions that they're doing. And then I'm going to talk about the similarities between what magicians' tools are and the hacking tools. I'm going to talk about basic psychology and some advanced psychology. And then I'm going to give an example, putting it all together, saying how I would apply it if I was hacking into a company. So first, let's talk about actions. The first one is important to know is the feint. Here's the pencil. See, that was a feint. I knew exactly where the pencil was. I was just pretending I didn't know where. You know, and and you see this in hacking. Like you go to websites and saying, we're now scanning your computer for viruses, and you see little dials spinning around and all that. It's not doing anything. It's just a feint. You know, and the next thing is the bluff, where they're basically saying something just an outright lie, and that's typically, you know, like the website saying, "Oh, we've just detected a virus on your computer. Please install this software." So, now the third thing is very important. This is the most important thing is the slide. You take something like this, and it just. There it is over here. It's no big deal. There it is again. Okay. It's just a secret action with some technique that magicians use, and a lot of times it requires a lot of practice to really be good at it. Some magicians will spend 20, 30 years just doing one sleight and doing it really good. Also, sleights are less valuable the more they're known. If you know what's happening, it's not as effective. Also, sleights can be worth a lot of money. There's an underground economy for magicians where they barter secrets with each other. So what's the equivalent in this in hacking? It's the exploit. It's a zero day. You know, all these things are true. I mean, a really good exploit is worth quite a lot. A speaker yesterday said they're worth like $100,000 and up for a really good exploit that works 100% of the time. You know, and also again, if you know about it, it's not as valuable anymore. And there's an underground economy as well. So, the fourth action is timing. You know, that's very important in magic to get the timing just right. And that can be used applied to hacking too. For instance, if you're doing a port scan, you do it over a long period of time, like over months or so, or it probably would not be detected. Now, props. Props are the objects magicians use. And some of them are just regular objects. But there are special objects, too. First of all, there's the gimmick. The gimmick is a secret device. You don't see it, but it has a secret function. You know, for instance, if I had a piece of tape, a sticky thing right here, and I could then to put this pencil right here and have it stay in my hand. Now, now there's also another type of gimmick where you don't actually have a special gimmick. You use another gimmick that has a secret function, which is what I did here with my finger. You know? So, and the equivalent in hacking, or the gimmick, is the rootkit. You know, it's hidden, you can't find it, you can't see it very easily, but it has a secret function. Now, the next thing is a gaffe. A gaffe is a device that has a function that you're aware of, but it's been modified. If I take a pencil and I stick a magnet on it or a thread, it becomes a gaffed pencil, okay? Now, and what's the equivalent of this in hacking? That's like a backdoor or an Easter egg function in some software. All right. Now, the third type of object which is used is a fake. For instance, if I have a rubber tube and I paint it yellow and stick an eraser on it, it wouldn't really be a real pencil. It would just be like a rubber tube that looks like a pencil, you know. But that's what a fake is. And what's the equivalent of this in hacking? Well, that's like a Trojan horse or a man in the middle. It's not really the website you're going to. It just pretends to be the website, and things are passing through it. All right, now there's people. But first, I'd like to do a demonstration. I need three people to have a dollar bill. Anyone has a dollar bill? You'll get it back, I promise. Okay, there's one. I need two more. Come on. Just stay right there. Okay. Two more people. Okay. Come on up. No, I'm not touching that bill. Okay. I want you to look at the bill so you're looking at the president. Okay. So he's right in the middle. Then fold it in half right down his face. So the president's on the inside. You got that? All right. Now fold it again, the same direction. Again. Okay. Now fold it. Top to bottom, fold it the other way down. Okay, and now give your bill to someone else so you don't have your original bill anymore. All right, now I need someone else. Let's see. Okay, let's see. Now I'm going to make sure I have all my stuff here. Okay, I need someone else to here. Okay, whoever gets it. Okay, pick it up and point to one of these three people. Or just tell me which one you want. First, second, third. Number two? All right, why don't you come on up. Now, I was going to bring a longer pole here. I'm not going to touch the bill, but I'd like you to put the bill in this clip. Now, I was going to have a longer one, but TSA had issues with it, so just put the bill in the clip. Yeah. All right. And the rest of you can sit down. You've got a bill. You're all set. Okay. So what I'd like you to do is I want you to come over here, step over here, and hold this up real high. Okay. Now I am going to try to read his mind. I'm going to try to determine the serial number of that bill. All right. Okay, please open up the bill and look at the number. You got it?
Yeah.
All right. Now I want you to, did I get the number correct?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Oh, you people are so gullible. Actually, why don't you read the serial number of the bill, step right up here, and tell everyone what it is.
F7602155I.
Thank you very much. And you can keep the bill, you're all done. Thank you. All right. So we're going to talk about people. And, of course, the first one you're all thinking of, a shill, a stooge, a secret accomplice, you know. Now, I made things a little bit interesting to you because maybe all three of those people were accomplices. You know, who knows? Now, for and of course, in hacking, this would be the insider threat, someone on the inside. Now, for this to work, you know, you really have to trust the person. If you don't trust the person, you know, or suspect the person, then this might not work. So that's very important, that if you would have trust in the person, the more you trust them, the more likely you're going to be deceived by them. There's an also interesting little ploy, it's been used in the magic on a stage production, where they had, the magician was the main character, and they had a protagonist, the enemy, someone who hated the magician. The magician, you know, put something, you know, on a table and covered it up with a cloth, and his enemy, his nemesis, says, "I don't believe you." And he picked up the cloth, says, "Yep, okay, it's still there." And then, boom, the thing vanished. And what really happened is the person who was the enemy was the one who was a secret accomplice. He stole the item out when no one knew about it. So this could be applied in hacking too. For instance, if you have someone who's an enemy of someone else, and if they say something about this other person, you're more likely to believe them, even though they might be an accomplice. But you see, this is also how it works. You get email, and it's more likely to believe it from a friend than a stranger, and so on. So now the second type of accomplice is an unwitting accomplice. This is like social engineering. That's what I did with the say yes gag. You know, I had him go along with it. Just for some fun. And you see this happening when sometimes social engineering, they call someone up and they give a big, one of your colleagues is visiting our site today and they're having problems getting access to the network and he's kind of busy right now. I'm trying to help him out. Could you please do me a favor? You know, so you see that happening a lot. All right, and the third type is the patsy or the fall guy. So if you want to know how that bill worked, just ask our patsy here. So I'm sure he'll tell you how everything all worked here. Don't ask me because I'm not going to tell you. All right, now let's talk about psychology. The most important principle in magic is naturalness. The professor, Di Vernon, is a noted expert in magic. He always stressed how magic had to be natural. Tarbell talked about it. A bunch of other people talked about it. If you're doing something and it doesn't look right, like, I could have the best sleight in the world, but if I had to go like this when I'm doing my sleight, it's going to be suspicious. So you have to do sleights so they look completely natural. And that's really the most critical thing. In fact, someone said, all magical effects have a flaw. And the stuff they do around it helps disguise that flaw. Because they really can't be natural. I mean, if they were really that good, they could just, point to someone, do something, boom, make a car appear, with waving their hands and all that. They always have to disguise it and do things around that to make it look somewhat natural. But what if you can't be natural? What if you can't do it, can't be 100% natural? Well, one of the first things a magician tries to do is they try to make it look as natural as possible. For instance, if you have an exploit and it generates 3 log entries, if you can eliminate 3 log entries and go down to 2, that's better. If you go down to 1, that's even better still. If you have no log entries at all, no alarm, stuff like that, that's the best. So that's the goal, is trying to, reduce anything or remove anything that is unnatural. If you're going to use a buffer overflow, if you pick, padding of all A's or something like that, the log files might show that up, and that'd be more suspicious than putting something that real file names involved in there. There's even a Mason had an interesting paper on shell code using the English words, which is a very interesting idea. So, and if you can't eliminate it, you try to find ways to hide it. I was listening to Paul.com podcast, and they had Mike Murray and Mike Murr were talking about how they used D instead of CL for Oracle. They were able to trick a lot of people into thinking that was the legitimate website when they tried to make it look as similar as possible. So that's, again, the same sort of principle in doing that. Now, and if you can't do that, sometimes you just can't do it. So what else can you do? You can make something that is unnatural become more natural. And you can do this with like, some sort of contrived justification. You come up with some sort of situation that help explain this, and maybe even adding things to it to make this sort of thing seem more reasonable, you can do that. Social engineering does this a lot. Another thing you can do is repetition. If you do something once, it's suspicious. If it happens 100 times, you know, and nothing happens, it's not so suspicious. For instance, if you had an exploit, which you may want to do, that you couldn't, you know, that would leave log entries, you could, for instance, create a tool that you let script kiddies run that looks like probes for this vulnerability but doesn't actually do anything. And if people started using these tools, they would start generating alarms on systems, but they realize, oh, it's just that script kiddie tool. It's harmless. It doesn't do anything. They might not notice it if you have a real exploit that has the exact, you know, signature as a script kiddie tool. All right. Now, let's do something else. I'm going to do a coin vanish. Okay. I'm going to take this coin. I'm going to move away from the mic a little bit. I am going to make this coin vanish by tapping it with my wand here on the count of three. One, two, three. And the coin didn't vanish. The pencil vanished. I stuck it behind my ear. See, you weren't looking for that. See, you thought the coin was going to vanish when I... Well, at least I still got my pencil. All right. That, thank you. There were no slights whatsoever in that illusion. All it was misdirection. That's all I used to do that. I just made you look somewhere else when I was doing it, and that's how that particular effect works. So misdirection, what is it? It's a way to control someone's attention so that they look over here when you're doing something secret over here. Now, how can you do this? One of the most important things you want to do is you want to find something that they're going to be interested in. You know, something that they're going to want to take a look at. Something that appeals to them or, you know, has a great interest to them. And it's hard to tell exactly what it is because there's so many different cases. People are different and all that. I mean, you can do things that might, magicians a lot of times would have an assistant in a skimpy outfit. And she might drop something and bend over to pick up something, and all the men would be looking at what, you know, her bending over while this magician's doing something secret over there. Those are examples of things like that. It all depends on what the crowd, you know, what appeals to the crowd. And I've seen this in some email and Facebook things where it says, oh my God, you won't believe what she's doing in this picture. And you don't, may not realize this. Wait a minute, there's something kind of hinky about this thing here, but the topic is such as say, I got to take a look at what this is, and you click on it. Okay, there's different kinds of misdirection. The first one is the directed misdirection, where you say, look over there, you know? And of course, that doesn't always work. You know, it has to be something logical that makes sense. You know, you can use certain things like if it doesn't make sense, it might be suspicious. And if you're suspicious, you may not look where they want you to look. You may look elsewhere. So it's really important to make this make sense. So you have to find out what attracts their attention. You know, Lady Gaga or Justin Bieber or free iPad. You know, that gets people's attention a lot. They stop thinking about certain things. So now the other thing you can do is on the uniqueness of the event. Some things that just sort of grab your attention. Hackers have set off fire alarms when they've broken into systems. They might be able to get access to the HVAC that's, you know, attached to a computer network and manipulate the environment that way. Or they could set off another attack. Sony was just mentioned recently how they had a very sophisticated attack that was happening while another attack was occurring, and that's why they missed it, if you believe them. Now, there's another kind, which is a little subtler. It's called discovered misdirection. In other words, you don't tell them about it. You wait for them to discover it on their own. So it's sitting there ahead of time waiting to be discovered. And when they look at it, they say, oh, my, and they look at this. So it can be very useful, but you have to control the timing, because the timing is not always under your control. If you can do certain things to make them want to go there and look at it, that's what this will do. So I'm going to give an example of this later on. There's also another kind of misdirection called constrained misdirection. Penn and Teller do something where they throw something over someone's head, and he doesn't know what happened to it, and everyone else does, because they're controlling what he sees. That can happen, you know, it happened a long time ago. I'm not too sure how it happens right now, but if you can control the environment, maybe get an administrator to have remote access into a machine that you control, they may not see the things that, you know, that they want it, they think they're seeing, because you're controlling the environment. So that's a possibility. Now here's some more advanced psychological techniques. I was just mentioning the misdirection, but there's a lot more magicians can apply to fool people. All right, one of the most useful techniques magicians use is they want to encourage a false conclusion. Magicians have these things they call sucker tricks, and it's designed so that when it's being performed, it's pretty obvious to you what's really happening, and you start thinking what it's going to be. They do this a lot with kids. You know, they want the kids to yell out and saying, I know what you're doing, you know, turn it around, it's on the other side, whatever. And of course, at the very end, the magician reveals the fact that, well, no, you're wrong, this is what really happened. They turn the other side and something completely different. Or they'll make you think that someone's hidden underneath a table that's surrounded by a curtain, and then they pull away the curtain at the last minute. So, you know, oh, they're not under the table, you know. So this is really, really useful. It's you have to basically get them to experience a false premise. A false alarm is also another thing that can do this. So that if you can generate an alarm, you might make them think something's happening when it's not. So that's another useful thing to do. You could repeat that, and they would also then learn to not trust alarms if you're abusing that. Some examples, the dark market sting, the guy was pretending to be involved in illegal activity. Another case I saw on the SANS mailing list, someone had a shockwave file, and it had malware in it. It had a virus in it, but it also had the ICAR test virus in it. Why would a file have a harmless a virus and a real virus in the same file? I think it was someone trying to be deceptive. Another good thing the magicians love to do is they like to be able to use multiple methods. If I can do the same effect using three completely different concepts, it becomes really hard for someone to figure out what's going on. For instance, let's say I was doing a trick and it required a trap door, okay? But I could also do the same trick, but this time I didn't use a trap door, I used the mirror. And they looked identical. If you saw both versions of it, you say, I've seen it more than once, and he didn't use a trap door, and he didn't use a mirror, so I don't know what he did. But meanwhile, it's like when I'm not using a trap door, I'm using a mirror. When I'm not using a mirror, I'm using a trap door. And that's very useful. So if you have multiple ways to do certain things, it makes it really hard to figure out which one it is that's really happening. And it's a very good psychological thing, because they say, once they say, well, it's not this, I know it's not this, they tend to want to believe that again. Another thing that some magicians have done, especially when they're working, trying to steal market share from another magician, is they will come up with an illusion that maybe is an improvement over someone else's illusion, and they'll tell people, says, unlike some magicians, we don't use a trap door or whatever it is, you know. And they purposely reveal the technique that other people are doing to improve the illusion of what they're doing. And that could be useful, too. We'll talk about that. All right. And another very useful thing for magicians is a switch, where they're using something, a gimmick, or I'm sorry, a gaff, using something that's gaffed. And What they do is they let you examine it, and then they regular object, and they switch it for the gaffed object, or maybe they do it the other way around, where they use the gaffed object, and they switch it for regular object, and then hand it out, let people take a look at this. So that, you know, that's very common. And you can do this in hacking, too. If you had, like, programs, you could switch programs in and out very quickly, or programs that self-destruct after they accomplish certain things. So there's ways that this can be done as well. Now, the fake revelation, I mentioned this before, and I'll give an example of this in a little bit in this scenario. Okay. All right. So let me summarize some of the stuff we talked about, and then we're going to give you the scenario. See, I believe there's a lot of things in common, but what I do not think is a lot of people have applied the psychological techniques of a magician as they're hacking as much as they could. And I'm going to try to describe this, and we'll call them, sort of call this person a magician hacker, I guess. I don't know what else to call. So let's pick a scenario. We've got this company, and they have some very valuable intellectual property. I'm thinking, for instance, they could have a server that has all their source code of everything on it, or some sort of database with very valuable financial information or something. But they also have very good security. This, you know, the XYZ company has really good security, and they got sharp people. Now, the hacker's inside. He's already gotten into the network, and he has limited access to it. But, and also one more thing, too, if this intellectual property is stolen and they learn about this, it may not be worth as much money. It might be, for instance, trade secrets that if you can steal those without them knowing it, it's more valuable. But if they know that it's stolen, they might do something else. And also, in this scenario, any obvious attempt to extract information and send it out onto the internet would be detected and blocked. So the initial thing of what might be done can't be done. You have to do something else. So what would the magician hacker do? All right, let me build the scenario a little bit. First, we're going to have a patsy involved. This is Unlucky Lucy. She is the administrator of this server. Okay? She's responsible for it. And she's smart. She's really alert. She's smart. If anything strange happened, she detects it. She makes sure it gets stopped. All right? But let's say the magician hacker has partial access to some of her files. Maybe she's got a directory that she owns and he can put some files into it. And also, she also has some files that under her control that can be propagated throughout the network. You know, maybe she's got some sort of startup batch file or something like that that people use or something along those lines. So what does he do there? He sort of scopes it out, finds the patsy, and then first step he's going to go to some web forums and create an account using Lucy's name and create some interesting little pieces of information there, which we'll discover later. Okay. All right. There's also innocent Ivy. You know, something's going to happen to her too, but this is all like setting up the discovered misdirection thing. All right. So the hacker has to do a little bit more work. He's going to create some files on a public-facing web server. But these are files that are not indexed on the main page. Search the spider might not find them. You have to know about the URLs to actually see these files. So these files are created, and they're available on the internet, but no one knows about them yet. Also, one more thing to sort of make this work is you have to make sure that since some sites do incremental backups, you want to be able to do a full backup, but you want to be able to make sure that the entire database is going to be backed up. So you may have to do something to make sure the size of the incremental backup is big enough so that it's going to be able to do a full backup. Now, this file that Lucy is distributing throughout the company, it's got a zero-day virus in it. You know, no one knows about this exploit yet. You know, it's undiscovered. And in fact, the virus doesn't do anything. It just sits there, might propagate. It sits there pretty quietly, just waiting for the right time. All right, next, the hacker generates a faked press release regarding the XYZ company. They are now announcing they're going into adult services. And goes on to quote about the CEO, John Smith, and says, there's a real need, you know, there's real money in here, and heck, I love pornography. So you can imagine what might happen. Well, let's go through, let's see what happens here. So then the hacker makes a phone call to Innocent Ivy, okay? Said, I was on this URL, and I found something on your webpage that I don't think should be there. And notices and lets Ivy know about this, and she checks it out, and she reports it to her manager. Says, "Oh my God!" And also the magician at the same time reveals the details of this new zero day. Here's the exploit. Here's how it works. Maybe says, "I've seen this in the wild," or something like this, or whatever. Just they put all the source, put all the information out there to let people know about it and let the hackers play around with it. So probably pretty soon you'll see malware using this stuff and all that. Okay, so this is things that we're doing the bluff, we're doing a wounded accomplice, we're doing creating a false conclusion, revealing an inferior method by others. So we're doing all that at this point. And we still haven't gotten to the good part yet. Okay, meanwhile, the CEO hears about this press release. He's obviously not reading Twitter first thing in the morning. Someone has to tell him about this stuff. And of course, he's going to be outraged about this. They're going to, the blogs are now talking about this press release, because it hit the news. They're talking about this. So they publish a press release in response, that say denying this whole thing. It's just, it's just a fake press release. Don't believe it. Okay, but then they learn he's got porn on his website. So we might have to issue another press release that sort of contradicts the first press release, saying maybe to figure out how to get around it. He's going to be sweating bullets on this. All right, and maybe the hacker has some. They found some of the screenshots of some of these. What these pages are, and publishes it on Twitter and stuff like that, and let people see what it is, so it all gets around. They're going to take it down quickly, but it's going to be there, and it might look like something, like there's the CEO saying, "This is good porn here," I personally guarantee it, So he is going to be pretty upset. Okay, and at this point, now antivirus companies are now creating signatures for that malware that we just talked about, that zero that just came out. So this is the first round of chaos. Let's go a little bit deeper. Okay, so now Ivy gets some random email saying, one of your people, Lucy, was talking about XYZ's company and their new porn stuff, new porn content, and how she thinks it's a really good idea and all that. We just want to let you know. I said, Lucy? Lucy did this? So anyhow, they check it out, and lo and behold, in Lucy's file, there's some JPEGs that were on the website, and maybe a rough version of that press release in her files. Ivy reports this to the chief, and Lucy gets fired. The stuff like this, they just want the people out of there as quickly as possible, just hush-hush, hide everything and all that, and get the person out of the door as quickly as possible. But now the blogs are talking about this too, about the porn pages that were showing up and how it, it sort of counters the first press release that came out. And the virus signatures are now updated, and propagated throughout the, throughout the systems to say, here's the new, virus that we're putting a signature into the system, and they're all getting updated. All right. So this is sort of the second round of chaos. So what happens now? Okay, now the hacker decides to publish a second press release, faked one, from the XYZ company, saying, Well, now is a policy that all our press releases are going to be cryptographically signed, and the public key to verify the contents of the press release is on our web page over here. And sure enough, there's a public certificate that's on the web page. They can go to it, they can validate it, and they say, oh, and by the way, you know, we are getting into the porn business, and this is cryptographically signed. And that the CEO has some issues with the current direction. All right. And by the way, the antivirus package just sort of says, oh, we have hundreds of machines are now infected with a virus. This is the third round of chaos. Shall we go on? All right. So, now next thing, this virus, it does have one thing this virus does. It was waiting for the right time. The time is now. It decides to make connections to random websites on the internet. But in the HTTP GET, in the header, they have this big new header in there that contains all this random information, random characters, very large files. Now, you know, and actually it really is random information, but from an analytical point, you can't tell the difference between something that's random and something that's encrypted. So as far as anyone can tell, this is sending encrypted information. And all the different machines are connecting to all these web servers on the outside and sending megabytes of data to, you know, tens of thousands of websites out there. And also, the antivirus package found some files in Ivy's directory. And it got triggered and notified. They look at them, and these are a little bit different. So this is the fourth round of chaos. Okay, finally. Okay, here's where we get to the final stage here. So in Ivy's directory, they find source code of this virus. Also, they found some more of these adult pages on there. And the press releases are also in Ivy's directory. So Ivy's now fired. So this is the fifth and round of chaos. Now let me summarize what's going on here. We got this complete circle of chaos here. First of all, they got a PR nightmare. You know, they keep coming out with these press releases, and their press releases contradicts other press releases, and they don't quite seem to know what they're doing. They're trying to handle this, trying to smooth everything out, and they're not quite too sure how to handle the situation. They also have this big virus infecting all these machines on the center, you know, all over the place. They've got to deal with that. You know, where's the virus? How's it propagating? What's going on? They might trace it down to the fact that maybe it was, you know, Lucy that was doing it. Everything that makes sense. But then maybe it's Ivy. She is involved too. So, and the third thing is they got all this, you know, gigabytes of traffic going out to the internet that's encrypted. What is in there? Maybe it's their intellectual property. Someone's doing all this stuff. They better figure out what this is and stop it soon. The fourth thing that they worry about is now they have two cases of wrongful termination. I mean, the CEO is not going to care about this. They just want the people gone. You know, they don't want to care about, you know, excuses. What's that? Oh, okay. It says wrongful termination. I don't know what it is. Well, I got chopped off. Okay. All right. And the next one is, now people are going to have problems with their management. They're not quite comfortable with what's going on because Ivy and Lucy got fired. People know these people. They can't understand what's going on. Rumors get spread. You know, people can't make up their mind as to what's going on and who's to blame for that. It seems like they're blaming people, you know, for no real reason, or maybe they are. It's really confusing. And the fifth problem that they have is the fact that, well, the server, the administrator of the server is now changed. They lost the primary and lost the secondary, so they have some other person not familiar with that server. Now, you think they're going to care about that last one? It's just not going to be something as high on their radar. So, now we're going to complete the illusion. Now, like magic, once you know what's really happening, you're going to be disappointed because it's so simple. That's how magic is. But it's not just the effect it's done, it's the whole creation of the illusion with all of the misdirection and all the psychology of the whole thing. That's what makes magic interesting. But the actual, what really happens can be very simple. So what we're gonna try, remember, what we're trying to do is trying to steal the information from the database and not be detected and be as natural as possible and leave no evidence. So this is what's done. It's pretty simple. Well, we're going to do a full backup of that database, and using some DNS cache poisoning or something like that, it goes to a different website, a different external server, maybe in a different country or whatever, but they may not notice it. And when it's all done, it sort of cleans up all traces of it. You know, the DNS cache will be cleansed, and as far as they can tell, everything looks perfectly fine. So therefore, you have profit. Thank you. All right, now, just to summarize some things to talk about, press releases should be signed. I think detecting this sort of technique is going to require a new sort of philosophy, of new ways of thinking about things and new motivations, understanding it. The obvious answer may not be the correct answer. It seems like it's the obvious one, but that may not be good enough. And unrelated events may not be unrelated. They may the whole thing may be part of a big package. Forensics are really important, and people, like computers, are assets, and they're vulnerable to denial of service as well. So in the DVD and on my webpage, there's an 18-page paper. I give a lot of detail of all this stuff. I've been collecting information about this. If you have any questions, contact me. I'll update the papers, and I hope you enjoyed it.